Hello there. Today is Tuesday, June the 14th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, a live update on wounded survivors in Orlando, Florida. The latest on what's trending on social media. Was the Orlando attack ordered by the Islamic State group or just inspired by it? An angered President Obama is taking aim at Donald Trump.
Calling a threat by a different name does not make it go away. This is a political distraction.
Also ahead on the lighter side, singer Pink is out with a new single. It's all on today's International Edition. And we begin with the latest on the worst mass shooting in American history that killed 49 innocent lives. VOA correspondent Ramon Taylor is in Florida right now in Orlando, joining us live with an update. Ramon, thanks so much for being with us. First of all, I know there are a lot of people struggling and suffering and grieving, and you've talked to many of them. How are residents of Orlando reacting to what has happened? I know there are real stories of heroism, too.
Thanks, Lori. It's very true. And Orlando, as you know, is grieving, and it's still very much in shock. But they've come together in many ways that they can, in their own personal ways. And so for some, you know, some of the heroic acts include going straight to the blood bank. On the first day, we saw a line of up to 600 people just curving around the block. And so that has been one way that they've shown their solidarity. Another way for some is just going to the scene and saying a prayer. We spoke with a couple residents yesterday who were there with their granddaughter. They wanted to have a special moment with her to show her what it meant to come together as a city after she had come to them and described the scene as she saw it. And then there's the vigil that we saw last night where people were giving away free hugs, signs that said, "This pulse doesn't stop, Orlando strong," and coming together in thousands. So there's really, you know, a million ways that people can show their support. And those are just a few examples.
They are really rising to the occasion and showing terrorists that Americans clearly cannot be taken back. Instead, they seem to come together.
That's right.
What about the 53 wounded survivors from Sunday's shooting? You were at the hospital where many of them were taken. What can you tell us about the scene inside the emergency room?
Well, as you know, about five of those are still in critical condition, and of the 53 that were initially admitted, the stories range. The physicians described the chaos at the scene when it first occurred. And in fact, one of the ways they described it was similar to just the press conference that morning. The journalists that were there were clamored over each other in large numbers. I want to say 60, 70, and that was the scene that were there. Many were awakened by a phone call after 2 a.m., hearing for the first time, "This is not a drill, this is not a drill." And they rose to the occasion. They showed up. And the way they described it to us, the physicians said they put their training to practice. This is what they were trained to do, and there was no time for error.
Have any of the survivors that are still now in recovery from that night come forward to share any details about the experience?
Yeah, in fact, we've heard from a couple. Patience Carter was one. She recalls hiding in a bathroom that night and just thinking that the greatest pain was hearing the amount of shots that continued to spray across the people that she knew, the other people at Pulse that night, and feeling that she would die that night. And she said she was guilty that she survived ultimately, when some of the people that she knew and cared about did not. And so she remains hospitalized after she was shot in the leg. And now there is Angel Colon. He was present at the press conference as well today. He described the scene falling down while others trampled him, shattering his leg. He recalls having the shooter spray bullets across the floor on those that had already been shot dead, thinking that he was next, until miraculously he was dragged on top of blood and glass to safety by police and treated by the personnel there. And so these are the people that he credits for saving his life and helping him to even smile at some point, you know, amid all the struggle that he and so many others are going through right now.
Ramon, I know it's a tough story to cover, and we appreciate you being there for us. Thank you so much for the update. VOA correspondent in Orlando, Florida, Ramon Taylor.
Thanks, Lori.
Well, let's continue now with the Orlando shooting for our next segment. Our social media guru, G. Abby Lee, is here in studio to tell us what's trending online after this deadly incident. Hi, G. I know this is definitely a topic of conversation that's not going away.
Definitely. And it's covered in various different angles. So There's an unlikely fast food restaurant trending since the Orlando shooting, and it's Chick-fil-A. Can you guess why?
I'm going to have to say maybe religion.
Well, yes, because they're very well known to be like Christian-affiliated fast food chain. The Orlando location stayed open Sunday to bring food to blood drive for victims of the nightclub shooting. And the chain is usually closed on Sundays because its founder is a Southern Baptist who believes Sunday should be a day of rest as the Bible teaches. But the local Chick-fil-A's stayed open last Sunday to deliver free food and drinks to those waiting in line to donate blood at the One Blood Donation Center in Central Florida. Most of the online responses to the restaurant's decision were positive. Many people are writing that the move shows Christians can be compassionate without sacrificing principles. The National Rifle Association, or the NRA, on the other hand, did not show very much compassion for President Obama in regards to the Orlando shooting.
What did they say?
Many people are sharing reports on a high-level NRA official's interview with USA Today. The NRA's legislative executive director, his name is Chris Cox, wrote to the paper that political correctness prevented federal action from being taken against the gunmen before the attack. He elaborated, destroy radical Islam, not the right of law-abiding Americans to protect themselves. More than 1,000 people responded to the USA Today's Facebook post, and the most liked response reads like this. You're absolutely right. Mr. Obama should do the right thing and declare NRA a terrorist organization that seeks to militarize society with weapons of mass destruction and arrest the leadership. Lori, back to you.
All right. Thanks so much, G. You can follow her at G. Abby Lee. Follow me at Lori London. Here are some of the stories at voanews.com. Could new gun laws closing terror loophole prevent the mass shootings? At least 60,000 migrants died or went missing in the past 20 years. What can the UN do to get aid into Syria? A new poll finds Americans divided along party lines about Arab refugees. And Disney, a Disney opening sparks fierce Chinese theme park rivalry. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. International Edition continues, and in light of the worst mass shooting in United States history, a fiery speech by President Barack Obama today aimed squarely at Republicans, in particular Donald Trump.
For a while now, the main contribution of some of my friends on the other side of the aisle have made in the fight against ISIL is to criticize this administration and me for not using the phrase radical Islam. That's the key, they tell us. We can't beat ISIL unless we call them radical Islamists. What exactly would using this label accomplish? What exactly would it change?
Let's talk more about this with White House correspondent Cindy Sein. The president, Cindy, seemed to have a major shift in tone with this.
Yes, that's right. It was a dramatic change of tone. One day ago, the press secretary had dismissed criticism by presumptive Republican nominee Trump and others of President Obama for not using the words radical Islam or Islamic terrorism when he talked about the threat from Islamic State and other terrorist groups. And the press secretary, Ernest, had just said, well, that was too small to comment on. And we have seen President Obama coming out flanked by his national security advisors, including top Pentagon officials, and just lashing out at Trump and other Republicans, saying, this is just a label. What would this change? Would this get us more allies in the fight? Would this make ISIS stop wanting to kill Americans? And the president was palpably and visibly angry.
Donald Trump also alluded to the president's intentions in his speech on Monday.
Yes, Donald Trump has several times said either the president is clueless and doesn't know what's going on, or he knows better than people think, and, you know, there may be something going on. It's just a bit of an insinuation. And the president did not comment directly on that, but he did comment on the on Donald Trump's call to ban all Muslims from immigrating to the U.S., saying that this country was founded on basic freedoms, including freedom of religion. He said there is no religious test in this country, and that that would actually make the United States less safe instead of more safe, because we do a good job of integrating Muslims into our society, and that's important.
Now, have we heard any response about the president's speech from either side?
No. Donald Trump, who's usually prolific on Twitter, has not commented. So far from Capitol Hill, I have not seen a lot of Republicans coming up to rush to Trump's defense. As a matter of fact, some, when asked whether they still support Trump, are not commenting.
Do you think this is only the beginning, if Donald Trump continues to take aim at the president, that the president will now use this strategy instead of sort of sitting back and just sort of discounting what he says?
Yes, that's a good question, because it seems that, you know, the president tries to stay above the fray to some degree. But perhaps now he's going to be out on the campaign trail with Hillary Clinton, and we may see more of his of this fiery rhetoric that we've seen so far.
All right. Thanks so much, Cindy. Well, U.S. officials say it does appear the gunman in Orlando was self-radicalized and inspired by various terror groups, but so far there's no evidence his actions were ordered directly by any specific group. Professor of Global Islamic Politics Greg Barton of Australia's Deakin University told VOA's Victor Beatty the Orlando shootings are eerily similar, though, to the attack carried out by a couple of Pakistani descent in San Bernardino, California, last December.
It'll be interesting to see what communications, if any, are picked up with other people in America or abroad, but it would be surprising if it comes out as this being orchestrated or planned by Islamic State. It seems sort of much more parallel to what happened in San Bernardino last December. That seems to be the sort of category we're dealing with, sort of homegrown. People say self-radicalized, that's probably a bit misleading, because people generally radicalize in some sort of social context. But I don't think we should dismiss the fact that in his own mind he wanted to justify what he was doing as having some sort of political logic to it, but it was probably also driven by very personal factors.
Are these kinds of attacks rare in your opinion, or is there a worrying trend that these may become more frequent?
I think, sadly, we've got to come to the conclusion the only basis for operating on now for people looking at these issues is to assume that this will become more and more common, and that this is a particular threat that we're facing. There's long been a concern about so-called lone wolves and homegrown extremists. Islamic State changes the mixture because it seems to particularly be effective at using, as it were, crowdsourcing techniques to inspire people to act in its name, and basically promising them, if you act in our name, whatever you attempt to do, whatever scale, we'll give you credit. This is the pattern of a threat that we're going to see. I think we will see attempts to do things like were done to the Metrojet flight out of Sharm el-Sheikh back last October. In other words, bring down aircraft with hidden devices, sort of large-scale attacks. I think we'll see attempts to have coordinated military-style assaults like we saw in Paris on November 13, when particularly using assault rifles that are very devastating. But even when we have an individual, and of course a vulnerability for America is the fact that by some accounts there are as many as 3.7 million assault rifles at large in the U.S., and one individual who knows how to use an assault rifle and has the state of mind to be as cold-blooded as Omar Mateen was, can, as we see, kill 50 people. It's unfortunately a perfect storm where we've now got a group in the form of Islamic State putting out a template and a formula and having a strong brand calling for this, and other social conditions in America but around the world that make this likely. So we will certainly see more attacks like this, and this will be the one kind of threat that authorities will be spending a lot of time thinking about how best to counter.
You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, the host for Jazz America, where each week we give you the best of jazz past and present and conversation with the music makers. You can hear the program online at voanews.com and on the air on VOA each Saturday and Sunday at 13 hours Universal Time. Join me for Jazz America and help me celebrate the greatness of a century of jazz. Listen at 13 hours Universal Time Saturdays and Sundays on voanews.com and the Voice of America.
The motivations of the man who carried out the Orlando massacre at the gay nightclub remain unclear, but they are subject to much debate and speculation on social media. In this week's hashtag VOA TV show, broadcast earlier today, my colleague Michael Lippin hosted a panel discussion to try to piece together the puzzling factors that may have led to the attack. One of the guests was Max Abrams, a terrorist analyst and professor at Northeastern University in Boston, who joined the program via Skype from Geneva, Switzerland. Michael asked what he thinks about two of the leading theories that the attack could have been motivated by radical Islam or by homophobia.
There's this strange phenomenon about terrorism. Whenever it happens, people want to know who did it, and then immediately they want to know why. And there's almost this implication as if there's, you know, a single explanation for why somebody did it. Social psychologists have found that we don't even really understand ourselves. And so trying to understand the motives is really difficult. I suspect, in short, that in this case, there are many drivers of his behavior. Yes, I do believe that Islam played some sort of a role. He pledged allegiance to Islamic State. Islamic State, of course, is very hostile to gay people, throws them off roofs. This guy also may not have been 100%. He apparently declared support to Hezbollah, expressed some support for Nusra. His father apparently was a Taliban fan. And then, of course, he declared allegiance to Islamic State. These are incompatible groups, especially with Hezbollah. He may also have had some sort of a personal grief because this was a site that he apparently had frequented and where he wasn't that popular. So I think all of these factors probably combined.
Well, another guest on hashtag VOA was an Iraqi-born human rights activist and advocate for secularism, Faisal Saeed Al-Matar. Michael asked for his opinion about reports suggesting the Orlando shooter was a closet homosexual acting out of self-hatred.
I think it makes total sense. And the thing is, like, this belief that gays or homosexuals should be killed is shared by many Muslim countries around the world. I mean, Saudi Arabia, and Iran and Qatar and Somalia and Mauritania and so many other countries in which homosexuals are either beaten or punished to death. So the fact that he, growing up in a repressive family and also the repressive ideology, he obviously had some, I think that pretty much played a major role. Obviously, the fact that he was able to access guns easily in the United States probably helped the means, but I think that when there is a will, there is a way, and the guy obviously had the will to commit that terrorist attack.
You can find out more about the conversation, watch the full show on the web at voanews.com/hashtag VOA. You can also contribute your thoughts about the motives behind the Orlando attack on the show's hashtag VOA Facebook page and on Twitter at hashtag VOA. Well, this is VOA's International Edition. Let's lighten things up a bit with some entertainment news. Singer Pink out with a long-awaited song. International Edition's Susan Yackey talked about it with Border Crossing's host, Larry London.
Yes, it's been 3 years coming, but Pink finally has a brand new song. And this song she recorded and co-wrote along with Max Martin for a film called Alice Through the Looking Glass, which is the sequel to Alice in Wonderland, Johnny Depp, and quite a few other stars from the first one. Yes, the film isn't doing all that well in the box office, but the song did very well. It got as high as a top 10 in the United States, went to number one in Australia. Pink, by the way, his real name is not Pink.
Well, I guess that much.
It's Alicia Moore, and she's been at it for quite a while and had quite a few songs. She's won 3 Grammys, sold over 30 million records. In 2013, Billboard named her the Woman of the Year.
Wow.
So she's been around for a while, and it's great to have her back. This is kind of preceding a new album. She's been at work in the studio on some new music, and so she's kind of teased us now with this new song. And hopefully she'll have a new album out.
And you are teasing me by not giving me the name of the song.
All right, I'll stop the teasing. It's Just Like Fire. And I'm wishing they stop trying to turn me off. I want it on. And I'm walking on a wire, trying to go higher. Feels like I'm surrounded by clowns and liars. Even when I give it all away, I want it all.
You know where I see Pink is on the Ellen DeGeneres TV show.
Yes, she sings the new theme song to the Ellen DeGeneres TV talk show. Mm-hmm. And they've been good friends for years and years. But Pink has been at it a lot longer than Ellen has and released so many albums and has had so many hits. She does well in the United States. And interestingly, she also does very, very well in Australia, where she kind of goes on tour for about 3 months and stays there only in Australia when she does finally go on the road. So it's interesting. And here's another interesting fact about Pink. Her daughter, 4-year-old Willow Sage, who appears in the video for the new song, Just Like Fire, says she doesn't like mommy's voice.
Oh, that's not nice.
I know. She said, please don't sing, mommy. And she made her, there's kind of an agreement between the two of them. She will not sing in the car.
Aww.
Whenever Willow's in the car. So it's kind of interesting.
Well, I think of her as being very athletic as far as her act goes.
That's great. She studied gymnastics and was a gymnast when she was younger and growing up. And incorporates a lot of that into what she does now on the various award shows she performs. And in her concerts on tour, she does acrobatics. She's swinging from a trapeze bar up in the air, and she does all kinds of acrobats. So that's kind of interesting you point that out.
Well, you know, I didn't know why she did it, but now it makes sense.
Yes.
Okay.
She's got a background in gymnastics.
Okay.
And a great songwriter, too.
Well, you've been listening to International Edition. We will be back tomorrow. Thank you so much for being with us. You can find us anytime at voanews.com. Follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. And thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jonah Cummings. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In 2015, terrorism continued to bedevil significant portions of the African continent. In East Africa, the Somalia-based terrorist group Al-Shabaab continued launching attacks and suicide bombings in Somalia, frequently targeting Mogadishu International Airport, Somali government facilities and hotels popular with government officials and business people. The terror group also set its sights on Kenya. In the Lake Chad Basin region, Boko Haram continues its attacks in northeastern Nigeria, Cameroon, Chad, and Niger. In West Africa and the Sahel, terrorist groups have conducted attacks against hotels and a resort frequented by Westerners. In 2015, one of the key developments in the global fight against terrorism has been the increased level of international cooperation and coordination in addressing cross-border and regional terrorist activity. So, for example, the Lake Chad Basin countries formed the Multinational Joint Task Force to confront Boko Haram, while the Horn of Africa nations are coordinating their efforts against Al-Shabaab in Somalia. The United States is deeply involved in assisting its partners in their efforts to degrade and dismantle these terrorist threats. The U.S., in partnership with Somali forces, supports African Union forces in maintaining pressure on Al-Shabaab and weakening the group's territorial control in parts of Somalia. In North Africa, the United States helps support the Trans-Saharan Counterterrorism Partnership. Through this program, we have been working with Algeria, Burkina Faso, Cameroon, Chad, Mali, Mauritania, Morocco, Niger, Nigeria, Senegal, and Tunis to build the capacity and cooperation of military, law enforcement, and civilian actors across North and West Africa to counter terrorism. The Partnership for Regional East Africa Counterterrorism is a U.S.-funded and implemented counterterrorism partnership that includes Djibouti, Ethiopia, Kenya, Somalia, Tanzania, as well as Uganda, Burundi, Comoros, Rwanda, Seychelles, South Sudan, and Sudan. We are expanding engagement with African governmental and non-governmental partners to better understand the drivers of violent extremism and design effective responses, said Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs Linda Thomas-Greenfield. The United States is committed to partnering with the people and governments of Africa to promote democracy, peace, and prosperity.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.